Welcome to Breaking Through with me, Kristen Rau Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising. I'm so glad you're joining us on the radio show this week. We cover the ways in which our democracy is under attack and how we can fight back, as well as cover the latest with the pandemic, childcare, schools closing, and legislation to lift us all. Did someone say the Build Back Better Act? I hear the Build Back Better Act on the horizon. And we also cover how we can elect the best candidates to public office possible. We're going to jump right in with our first guest. And we are joined by a guest who's going to fire you up and encourage you to take action to save our democracy, people. We have to save our democracy. We're joined right now by Jana Morgan with the Declaration for American Democracy. Welcome, Jana.
Hi, Kristen. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. We are in the middle of a big push to help save our democracy. This big push is happening as more than two dozen states have had voter suppression laws put on the books recently. And as we've seen more and more and more attacks on our voting rights, attacks on our democracy in really, really, really unhelpful ways. Can you give us the inside scoop on what's happening inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital right now relating to saving American democracy?
Absolutely. So we're in a critical moment right now. We are 5 minutes to midnight on American democracy. And so the debate that's happening inside the Beltway right now is both on how to advance the Freedom to Vote Act and how to overcome Republican blockades of progress. So we've had, I think, 4 or 5 votes now on critical voting rights bills that have been blocked by Republicans in the Senate using the filibuster, which is an archaic relic of Jim Crow that basically allows or requires 60 votes in order to move on to debate of a bill. Now, it only takes a bare majority to pass the bill, but to debate, it requires 60. And so the discussion right now is happening around rules reform and how can we reform this rule to actually restore the Senate to a functioning body. And the reason we need to do that is because American democracy is under attack, as you have said. And every day that we waste, you know, bickering about rules is another day that we deny all Americans, no matter where they live or what their background is, the freedom to vote in a safe, transparent, and accessible way. And as this is going on, we also have redistricting happening all across the country. And we know that maps are being redrawn to disenfranchise certain people. So the timing could not be more salient and more important right now that we, you know, stop the discussion about rules and that we actually begin the debate on this bill and pass it.
When we're talking about our democracy being under attack, can you give us some examples of what that looks like? We've talked about on the show in prior moments, laws that are making things like it illegal to give water to people who are waiting in lines to vote in Georgia. Ridiculous, ridiculous, because of course there should not have to be lines to vote anywhere because we should have enough places open for people to vote so that lines don't have to form. But what kinds of laws are we seeing that are directed at voter suppression?
Absolutely. So, you know, in states across the country, self-serving politicians and dark money groups are restricting voting rights using a variety of different tactics. And they're especially targeting people who are in communities of color, young people, voters who are disabled, and they're putting laws in place to sabotage or overturn elections. And some examples of that are that there are 34 laws that have been enacted in 19 different states that restrict access to the ballot box in 2021 alone. In Texas, for example, Republicans passed a bill that targets urban areas and restricts voters' options, including imposing new hurdles on mail-in ballots, banning drive-up ballots and drop-offs, and empowering partisan poll watchers. And then in Georgia, of course, the GOP passed an anti-voter law that allows partisan politicians to simply remove local election officials from their posts. In Arizona, they're passing a law that would allow state legislature to overturn the results of a free and fair election in that state. This is an emergency that we need to respond to. And unfortunately, Republicans in Congress are holding up blockades to stop progress here. And what's truly kind of ironic about all this is that the Freedom to Vote Act, which would stop these bill or these anti-voter laws in their places, would stop big money from influencing our elections, would stop partisan gerrymandering, and would stop election sabotage, along with the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which would restore the powers of the Voting Rights Act and make it so that laws like this can't be passed in the future. They are broadly popular across the United States at 70, 80, and in some instances, 90% Democrats, Republicans, Republicans, independents, they all support the components of these bills. And the only place it's not bipartisan is in Washington, D.C. And so you really have to ask yourself, why are Republicans continuing to block these common sense bills? And why are we still fighting about rules reform when we see that these blockades continue? We need to do it now so that we can get these passed in time for 2022 so people are able to actually vote in the upcoming elections.
And what's important to note here is that these laws are happening for basically no other reason than voter suppression. When research has been done looking at, is there overvoting happening anywhere? The answer is no. We are not having a problem in the United States of America with people voting too often. In fact, we have a problem with people not voting enough because we don't have time off for voting. And there are many, 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 many hurdles to voting. The United States of America has one of the lower voter participation rates of any industrialized nations. And so it's on us to lift our democracy, to break down barriers to voting instead of raise barriers to voting. And can you talk to the people who are misinformed and worried about overvoting or some other, quote, reason, end quote, for having these voter suppression laws?
Absolutely. You know, I think what's important to note is that the attack on our democracy didn't just start on January 6th, and it didn't just continue, you know, on January 6th. The attack on our democracy began well before the 2020 elections, with rampant and purposeful dis and misinformation being put out there saying, oh, well, you know, if one person doesn't win, then obviously the election was flawed. That's why it's called the big lie. It is a big lie, and it has continued. And that misinformation is what caused the January 6th failed insurrection. And it's what people are using as an excuse for these anti-voter laws. So as we head into debates and votes on the Senate floor about laws that will restore our democracy, Republicans are eager to keep this status quo of dysfunction, ramping up their misinformation, and exploiting the filibuster for their political gain. Because what should be happening is not, you know, lies about our elections, which are free and fair. And actually, we had the biggest turnout in voter in American history for the 2020 elections. So the questions that they should actually be asking are, why did we lose the election? What do we need to do? What changes do we need to make in our policy platform to attract more voters? Not how can we suppress people's vote to rig the game so that we can win? And that's what Republicans, unfortunately, are doing across the country right now.
So as Republicans are doing this, what can people who love democracy, who want everybody who wants to vote to be able to vote, what should they do right now, particularly as we have multiple voting rights policies moving forward in the U.S. Congress in this moment? What's your advice?
That's a great question. There's a couple of things that you can do. First, we are heeding the call of Martin Luther King III, Andrea Waters King, and Yolanda Renee King, civil rights leaders, community organizers, and others who are calling for this Martin Luther King Day to be a day of action. They're saying no celebration without legislation. And so they're hosting events on Saturday in Arizona, a bridge walk, a historic bridge walk. And then they're participating in the DC Peace Walk on Martin Luther King Day on Monday. And what we are doing is heeding the call, working with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights to do distributed actions across the country. So we're encouraging folks that already have plans, because we know communities have you know, annual plans that they do for Martin Luther King Day. If you already have a plan in your community, we're asking you to infuse it with discussions and talk about voting rights and actions on voting rights. And if there isn't one in your community, we're encouraging people to host one. You can host a day-long hunger strike. You can host a press event, a protest, or a call-in day. And we've put all the materials together that you will need. You can go to mlkdayactions.org, and it has all the information that you need. We're also encouraging people to go to our website, dfadcoalition.org, dfadcoalition.org, and there you can find how you can call your senator, write an LTE, send an email, and a host of other actions that you can take to ensure that your elected officials are hearing from you that you want to see your freedom to vote protected now.
Everybody go to mlkdayactions.org and dfadcoalition.org, D-F-A-D, coalition.org. Get involved, stay involved, keep fighting for our democracy, because one of the important things about democracy is that in order to make democracy work, it takes constant participation, not one-time participation. It takes us constantly voting. It takes constant maintenance to have a democracy. And that's a good thing. We want our democracy in the best of all times to represent our contributions, our needs, what's happening in the United States of America. So I ask a question of you, is there hope?
There is absolutely hope. I have seen over just the last year, people keep showing up to demand a democracy that works for us all. And we have been doing activations for you know, quite a long time. And we know that with the pandemic, you know, people are tired. It's been a long time and it's been a long push, but people keep showing up. We have had people take to the streets. We had over 400 events over the summer throughout the United States where activists showed up and they demanded their freedom to vote. We had over 300 activists in the fall arrested in front of the White House, myself included, demanding that President Biden do more on this issue. And we're seeing that progress with the speech that President Biden gave yesterday about how this is the most important event or issue facing America since the Civil War. And then on January 6th, in a day of honorance and remembrance and honorance and action, we had 350 events around the country. So I am hopeful because the activists make me hopeful. The people continue to show up and they continue to demand a democracy that works for us all. So I believe that we will win, and we just need folks to continue to do what they're doing, show up and demand action from your elected officials.
Now, if people have 5 minutes to call their two U.S. senators, what should they say?
You should call your senator and say, I want you to protect my freedom to vote. I need you to do that because I want a democracy that works for me and my family. And in order to do that, you need to change the rules in the Senate. I want you to do it. Do whatever it takes to ensure that our freedom to vote is protected and that American democracy is protected. Otherwise, we will backslide into autocracy.
Yeah, and that's not okay. What does that look like? What are the we've got on one side democracy, yay, the other side autocracy, boo. What does that look like?
Well, autocracy looks like a government that doesn't work for you, that doesn't make sure that people have access to healthcare. That means that we won't be able to do what we need to do on climate change to save the planet. We won't be able to get a fair minimum wage. We won't be able to lower prescription drug prices. And we won't be able to get people the kind of help that they need during COVID, because you'll have a government that is run by corporations or run by strongmen rather than acting in the will of the people. And we already know we have challenges with money and politics in our political system. But if our democracy backslides and our elected officials are no longer reliant upon your vote, they aren't going to be acting in your favor. They'll be acting in the favor of whoever has the deepest pockets. And we need to make sure that that does not happen and that every single American has a say so that our government actually functions in our name and for our needs.
So important. Couldn't be more important. So everybody, please go to mlkdayactions.org, get involved, and also go to dfadcoalition.org and get involved there too. dfadcoalition.org. Get involved, stay involved. Together, we can protect our democracy. It really does take our voices rising together to create the change we need. We have so many examples throughout history of when people did use their voices and did use democracy to make sure that we protected and saved democracy and also lifted our families. So thank you so much for being on. Thank you for all that you do. Let's do this. Let's save democracy. And thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. And let's go.
We're going to take a quick break, but stick around. We'll be right back talking about the pandemic, its impact on childcare, on schools, on families, on businesses, on our economy, and what we can do about it. We'll be back in a quick flash. We're going to fight for love. Breaking Through with me, Kristen Ralph Finkbeiner, powered by Moms Rising. We are joined right now by a spectacular, wonderful, amazing guest, Melissa Botaic of the National Women's Law Center. Welcome, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
I am so thrilled that you're on because we are in a situation, and our family, we like to call it a level 23 situation out of 1 to 10 levels that are possible. And we are once again really in the middle of a raging pandemic with a surge of COVID cases going on right now, with schools and childcare centers closing, and with parents really being pushed out of the labor force because they don't have adequate access to affordable, high quality, accessible childcare. And as we're renewing the fight for the Build Back Better package, which includes, of course, preschool for free for all 3 and 4 years old kids, and also childcare for everyone. It feels like the longer we wait, the worse it's getting for families and early educators, especially with this new COVID wave. Can you tell us a little bit about what are some of the biggest issues already in 2022, which might for some people feel like 2022 already, like we've aged 1,000 years since 2022 started. And what's happening with childcare that Build Back Better would address, and how can we move forward? What are your thoughts?
So the childcare sector had a crisis that predated the pandemic. For far too long, it's been too hard to find and afford childcare. And at the same time, the early educators who are doing the amazing work of caring for our loved ones and our little ones were getting paid poverty wages. And then when the pandemic came, it basically pulled the veil back and showed just how fragile the system was. And so now we're at a place where you have many, many childcare centers or home-based providers who are not able to stay in business. We are continuing to lose childcare workers because Walmart and Target and other retailers can offer greater pay and parents can't afford to pay more. And you are seeing, the resulting collapse. And so the relief plan, the American Rescue Plan, without that, we would be in an even worse situation because that relief money has helped provide some bonuses for providers, has helped some parents afford care, has helped keep the system sustained. But that's not going to last forever. The idea behind Build Back Better is that we are actually addressing the underlying problems that led us to be so vulnerable in the first place, and actually building a childcare system and free universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds so that we have a strong system for parents, for providers, and for the economy overall.
Yeah. And that is so important. We need to actually build back better, not temporary scaffolding better. We need to build back better. And I'm 100% with you on that. And right now, a lot of what we're seeing are staffing shortages across the whole country in every sector, including the childcare and early learning and pre-K educator sectors. And we've been hearing from families in 2022 that between the staffing shortage and COVID and snow days and other weather days, that their kids are home more than they're in childcare. And that when childcare is open, the hours are shorter and not covering the workday needs of many, many people. Can you talk a little bit more about why this is happening right now? Where is the childcare worker, the childcare professional, the childcare educator, the early educator shortage coming from at its root?
I mean, the root of this problem is decades of disinvestment. Right now we are still down 111,000 childcare jobs since the start of the pandemic. And again, these are almost all women workers, and they are disproportionately Black, brown, and immigrant women. And we have undervalued their labor and the important work that they do for a long, long time. And now, these are jobs where you're going to, care for children who are not yet vaccinated in most cases. And you're getting paid poverty wages to go work a frontline job. And at the same time, you have, other, like whether it's retail or other large businesses, able to offer $15 an hour when the average pay for childcare workers is closer to $12 an hour. And these are women who typically love the work that they're doing, but just can't afford to stay in the sector. And the answer isn't just, oh, well, parents will pay more because we already can't afford childcare. It's a classic example of a market failure, as Secretary Janet Yellen mentioned earlier this year, I guess last year. And so what we actually need is to finally reckon with the idea that childcare, just like K-12 public education, is a public good and requires public dollars to build the system that we actually need. Because right now, parents are at a breaking point, early educators are at a breaking point, and there's no slack in the system left.
Yeah, but Build Back Better does build back better and builds a system that allows parents to thrive, parents to be able to go to work. It allows childcare workers to receive living wages, and it also allows kids to receive excellent early education. It's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win. What are the prospects of it moving forward? And importantly, how can people who are listening help move it forward right now?
So the prospects are, you know, anyone's guess, but I think I'm optimistic because I think that the, you know, the crisis right now is so great. You cannot ignore it. There is very good reason to believe that lawmakers want to get something done. The question is what it will look like and will childcare and early education be in it? And so I think that we need to do two things. We need to make sure that we are calling our lawmakers and Congress and at the White House and letting them know they must pivot back to build back better after voting rights. They must get the conversation back on track and continue to make the case publicly for passing this. And they need to make sure that whatever is passed includes childcare and early learning.
Absolutely, 150%. So call your U.S. senators and say pass Build Back Better immediately. Now, one of the things that some people are saying they are hearing is that parents across the country don't really know what the provisions in Build Back Better would mean for their daily lives. If passed, can you tell us what would be in Build Back Better, particularly related to childcare, in terms of how, when we say more affordable, more accessible, higher quality childcare, and free pre-K for all 3 and 4 years old kids, can you unpack that in terms of what that would mean day to day for families?
Yes, because life will get so much better. So right now, it is really hard to find childcare. Never mind afford it, just even find it. This has enormous investments in building the supply of childcare. And so we're going to be investing in the workforce. We're going to be building facilities. States are going to get, they're going to get money from the federal government for 3 years without any state money required in order to sort of help build and set up that system and slowly phase in eligibility to receive childcare assistance. And then in year 4, you're going to have a childcare guarantee. And that means that for families earning up to 250% of their state's median income, they are not going to pay more than 7% of their income towards childcare. And you think about right now, most parents are paying more than 10% of their income towards childcare, and low-income parents are paying about a third of their income towards childcare. So this is huge in terms of bringing down the cost of living for parents of young children and enabling parents, and especially moms, to work or to work more hours if they need to. And it also means that we're going to have a better educated, compensated workforce. And what that means is less turnover and higher quality care for our kids, because one of the most important things for babies and toddlers is loving, nurturing, stable relationships with their caregivers. And if we don't pay childcare workers fair wages and they have to go leave the profession and there's that turnover, we're not getting as high a quality experience for our own kids. And so it's really important that the Build Back Better plan addresses provider compensation and values these women and disproportionately women of color for the important work that they're doing. It values our families, and it's going to save an average of $5,000 a year for parents who are paying for childcare.
It's a win-win-win-win-win. And also businesses are going to be able to have more of those help wanted positions filled, because right now we've got a lot of people who are pushed out of the labor force because they don't have access to childcare. They're on waiting lists for childcare. They can't afford childcare, which now costs more than college, or there's not high quality childcare available near them. There is a trifecta of problems right now with childcare. There's affordability, access, and quality. And the Build Back Better Act actually helps lift all three of those issue areas, which also helps lift not only families, but businesses too, who need those workers. Who need people in. It can also help with inflation. Now, we saw some interesting inflation numbers recently, but we also know that inflation is in part driven by supply chain issues. And supply chain issues happen when we don't have people in jobs who are creating the merchandise, the item that is the supply, right? And so in order to have people at work, we need to have access to a care infrastructure, including childcare, so people can actually go to work, which then in turn helps address inflation, helps lower family costs, helps lift our country, helps lift businesses who need those workers. It's a triple, 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 quadruple, I think, maybe win. You were going to say something, Melissa. What was it?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that this is also going to help parents of school age kids, because even though Build Back Better is focused on birth to 5, what that is going to do then is free up some of the existing childcare money that we have to provide greater assistance and support for before care, after care, and summer care. So parents of school age kids are also going to see a benefit if we're able to pass Build Back Better.
This is good. This is a super win, 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 win. What's your advice?
I was going to add one more win to your win, win, win.
Oh, I want to hear another win.
That was the other win. And I can come up with a million wins because this piece of legislation is going to be transformational for moms and the families who depend on us. And we're going to do everything in our power to get it over the finish line.
Yeah, I have another win. It has a huge return on investment. Studies show that for every $1 in to childcare and early learning, that taxpayers later get back at least $8 due to fewer later grade repetitions and other cost savings as the child grows up. So this is a big, wonderful, spectacular deal. Now, this means hopefully that every single listener is going to want to do something to help this pass. What's your advice on the best thing to do to help pass the Build Back Better Act, which of course has these provisions within it?
So the best thing to do is call your lawmakers, call your senators, especially, and call the White House and let them know this is a priority for you. Share your story with Moms Rising. Share your story with your lawmakers about what the lack of affordable, high quality childcare means for you and what Build Back Better would mean in terms of your being able to be more financially secure and have your children in high quality care. Write op-eds or letters to the editor, but find a way to make known what you are going through right now and to hold our lawmakers accountable to act immediately to pass Build Back Better.
Absolutely. And join the National Women's Law Center. How do people do that?
People should go to www.nwlc.org and sign up to get our information. We send out regular updates.
Yeah, and your updates are really great. I mean, there's a lot of updates, a lot of data. There's a lot of ways to take action, but a lot of data, including the equal or unequal pay numbers, which come out every year. And I know I use as a resource. And one of the things that studies also show is that when we have a care infrastructure, we'll actually help lift equal pay for equal work and help get rid of some of that wage discrimination. And that care infrastructure includes access to childcare for all, paid family medical leave, home and community-based services, healthcare, and more. But thank you so much for being on, Melissa. Thank you for all you're doing. Thank you for pulling our nation forward. Thank you for finally building the care infrastructure we all need by pushing it forward through Congress. Now, I might note, the National Women's Law Center played a big role in passing the Build Back Better Act through the House. So this is not something that is sort of one of those things that is impossible. It's already passed through the House, people. We just need to get it through the Senate. So call your U.S. senators and tell them, get moving on Build Back Better. And thank you so much, Melissa, for being on and all you do.
Back at you, Kristen.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. Next up, Democracy on Fire. How can we save our democracy? We have some tips for you in just a quick moment. We're going to fight for love. Finer, powered by Moms Rising. We are joined by a very special, spectacular, amazing, nation-lifting, democracy-saving guest, Barbara Arnwine, who is president and founder of the Transformative Justice Coalition. Welcome, Barbara. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I am delighted to be on. These are momentous times, and we absolutely have a lot to discuss.
There's so much to discuss, so much happening, and there is breaking news all the time. Yes. One of the things that is giving me hope is many of our leaders in Congress who are, I might add, Democratic leaders in Congress, people who, if you are making plans to vote in the future, I want to say who's helping lift democracy and who's not, are finding ways to come through to help protect and sustain our democracy. What's happening? What are you seeing? What is giving you hope right now, Barbara?
Oh, so much. One is the, of course, the momentum that came out of the president's speech yesterday. You know, as I said, I wish he had done that speech earlier. I wish it had been a speech on the Senate floor. But the momentum is what was needed for him to say, we must adopt a rule change in the Senate that allows for the filibuster to be overcome and the Freedom to Vote Act, which is the current version of what used to be the For the People Act, and for the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act to proceed. And so it's really exciting that he finally said it, because he didn't say it in Philadelphia. And all of us who watched the speech yesterday thought it was a better speech, of course, than the one he gave in Philadelphia, but it was much better because he said, we got to overcome the filibuster. Well, the good news is that earlier today, he announced, the president, President Biden announced that he was going to join the Democratic caucus luncheon tomorrow in the Senate. And that was exciting to know that he's continuing the push. But tonight, this evening, we received some really exciting news saying that they have discovered under existing laws, meaning there has to be no change of any law in the Senate, that there's a process by which they can actually avoid the filibuster, that they can have a message sent over from the House with the bills for, quote, a conversation, I guess is technically the way it is posited. And it allows for the Senate to, with a simple majority vote, to actually go ahead and open debate. So remember, what we've been fighting for since July has been a debate on these bills. We've been, you know, fighting for just the right to even invoke a cloture to have the ability to open the debate, the discussion of the bills. Once that discussion and debate is over, a vote is in order. So this is what we've been waiting for. And it's an exciting moment. And I can't begin to urge upon everybody that we are determined to get these bills enacted to save our voting rights for over 55 million people and to save our democracy. It's our last chance and it's a needed chance. So I am excited about everything, all the activism, and we can talk about some amazing activism that will be happening tomorrow because we take nothing for granted. We don't assume anything is a done deal until it's done. And we know that we can't declare victory until it's won. So we are in this moment on the precipices of a possible new day for our democracy.
And can you share a little bit about what's at stake? What's on the line right now? What should people be worried about our democracy right now?
Oh, my goodness. Just yesterday, while the president was speaking about voting rights, three horrific anti-democracy events were happening. The North Carolina courts announced that they were approving a partisan gerrymandering of the districts in North Carolina that would basically give something like a 70% majority to the Republicans. And I'm just saying what the facts are, when, of course, that.
Perfect. I'm rolling.
When, in fact, you know, the majority of voters in that state are Democrat leaning. So that's just another example of how these state legislatures, including, you know, Texas, Florida, North Carolina being notorious, have been really creating these districts that what they call crack the Democratic voting base, that are packed the Democratic voting base, making it unable to elect a Democrat, for example. And of course, you know, that, you know, all kinds of gerrymandering exists. You got partisan gerrymandering, and this is a partisan gerrymandering, meaning it's being done to benefit Republicans. And then there's racial gerrymandering, which is where you make the racial voting power of a racial group diluted or basically ineffective, less powerful. So this was a devastating announcement in the middle of his speech. As he was speaking yesterday, as the president was speaking, the state legislature in Georgia was announcing a plan to cut the number of drop boxes in Atlanta. Remember, they hate Atlanta because it's so heavily African-American. and they've been after the Fulton County, you know, Board of Elections forever. They announced that they're going to cut the number of drop boxes in Atlanta from 111 to 23.
Wow.
Did you hear me? From 111 to 23.
That's ridiculous.
In the middle of the president's speech. What else happened yesterday? In Georgia, also, there is Lincoln County. Lincoln County is 28% Black. It's a largely rural county above Savannah, if people know what I'm talking about, you know, it's above Savannah, closer to Augusta area. And Lincoln County has announced that of their existing seven polling sites, everybody listen to me, of their existing seven polling sites, they're going to cut away six of those polling sites. So there will only be one polling site for the entire county. And that polling site is going to be downtown. Remember, I said it's a rural county. What does that mean? There's no Lyft. There's no Uber. There's no big transportation bus system. So people who live in the outer regions outside of the town are going to have a real difficulty getting into town to vote. And this is not a, quote, rich county. Let's get very clear. In Georgia, we have, you know, very high rates of poverty in our rural areas. We have what we call internet deserts. I'm serious. You can drive and all of a sudden there's just no internet whatsoever, not because you got bad Wi-Fi or bad reception. It just doesn't exist. It's a desert. So we also know that food insecurity is a huge issue in Georgia. So not everyone has a car. This is a major effort to stop voters from having access to the polls from 7 to 1. How do you even come up with such a merciless, horrific disenfranchising scheme? All of this happening as the president is speaking.
It's unbelievable. And there's still hope on the horizon, though, because in Congress, they are considering two very important pieces of legislation. Can you share with us the names of those legislation? And should people call their U.S. senators and say, please vote yes?
Yes. Freedom to Vote Act. Everybody, the Freedom to Vote Act, even in West Virginia, is supported by more than 3/3 of all the people, because it does wonderful things. If you've ever had to vote and said, what am I going to do? Because I got to be at work and I'm conflicted. What am I going to do to get to the polls? If you've ever worried about that, guess what? This new bill will make Election Day a holiday. So you will be able to go to vote at your best convenience. It will mandate 2 weeks of early voting. Think about that. All these states that don't have early voting at all. There are, believe it or not, there are states that have zero early voting. And imagine you just having to vote on one day, period. So that changes that. For all our moms out there, guess what? It means that we can take our children with us to the polls. And teach them about democracy, about being voters, because now we don't have to worry about scrambling off to work, trying to find daycare, all of that on Election Day. What a change. I also love the fact that it would make voter registration automatic. So the minute you turn 18, you will be registered to vote. You don't have to go looking for a registrar. You don't have to worry about somebody losing your papers. You would automatically be entered into the database as a registered voter. And of course, if you don't want to be one, you could decline once you're informed. It would allow for same day election voter registrations, so that somehow you fall out of the voter rolls, instead of standing there and being told that you got to vote absentee, that you cannot vote, that you got to vote in a provisional ballot, that is, instead of being told that you got to vote provisionally, you can't vote at all, you would be able to register right then and there. And don't, I know some people are saying, what? Guess what, folks? A whole lot of states already do that. So it's a wonderful mechanism. It has never been linked to any kind of fraud or any other problems. Same day registration is powerful. It also would restore the vote to formerly incarcerated persons. The minute those with felonies, the minute they walk out of jail, they are eligible to vote, to be registered and to vote. So that is a major advantage, because right now we know there are 6 million people who are blocked by state law, and there's another 9 million people who are confused. They don't know if they have the right to vote or not, because they were formerly convicted of a felony. So that will change that, because of all these good people who are out there doing great things, trying to support their family, working in our communities, but they're blocked from voting. It would also get dark money out of politics. It would have mandatory disclosure provisions. It would require that gerrymandering end, that redistricting has to be fair. And all this evilness that we were just talking about in North Carolina would stop. So these are the beauties of these that law. The John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act is designed to stop discrimination in voting. So any law that a state that has a history of discriminating in voting, before they could implement the law, they can pass it if they want to, but before they could implement it, make it, actually be in effect, they would have to prove that it's non-discriminatory. It would have to be, quote, pre-cleared by a, federal district court in the District of Columbia or by the Justice Department. And the reality is when you're reading folks and getting upset like I am about these laws that say that you cannot give people food or water who are waiting in 8 and 9 hour lines because the state and those counties did not provide enough polling places. If you're worried about those kind of laws, then let me assure you, a lot of those laws would never be held as non-discriminatory, because they usually have a discriminatory impact. So there's so much good. I mean, I always like to tell people that these are your two bookends. You got the For the People Act, setting uniform nationwide standards so that every state has the same law for federal elections. And you have the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, that captures any bad actors, any bad acts, discriminatory acts. I say those two, I call them the two bookends that sit on the shelf of voting rights to hold all of our voting rights together and to keep them from falling off the shelf. So these are major laws. These are transformative laws. The beauty of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, by the way, is that it restores the law to where it used to be in 2013. It was a conservative Supreme Court under John Roberts that tried to pretend that discrimination in voting didn't exist, that really crippled, made that law less effective by taking away its coverage. So now this would restore that law. So they would have to prove that it's non-discriminatory. And that would be a major, I guess people say, back to the future move, but we need it because none of these states would be out there passing all these ugly, vicious, discriminatory laws if they knew that they were going to have to pre-clear them before they could implement them.
These are such important laws. Thank you so much for being on. Barbara Arnwine, Transformative Justice Coalition, for sharing what's happening in our nation's capital, why it's important for you who are listening to call your U.S. Senator right now and say, protect our voting rights. Yes. Thank you for all you do. Thanks for being on, Barbara.
Yes, call 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. And a big shout out to everybody who is doing the hunger strikes, to the students and everybody else who are putting their lives on the lines and sacrificing. Everyone, we're going to get this done. MLK Day will be a new day for America. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go away. Next up, we're talking about voting. We're talking about running for public office, and we're talking about leading. We'll be back in just a quick moment with more tips for you. We're going to fight for love. Powered by Moms Rising. We are joined right now by a guest you are going to love, 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 and adore, Erin Velarde of Vote, Run, Lead. Welcome, Erin.
Hi, Kristen. How are you?
I'm good. We've been talking on the show about our democracy being under attack, about the need for critical policy like the Build Back Better Act that builds the care infrastructure that we've needed forever and ever and ever and ever, and that most other countries have and already take for granted, like affordable childcare, paid family medical leave, access to health care, you know, the basics. And now you're on, and we're going to talk about something really important: candidate. What's important is making sure that who we are as a country is reflected in our nation's capital, in our Congress, because then we get the best legislation possible. Can you talk a little bit about Vote, Run, Lead and how that helps lift our democracy and lift our priorities?
Absolutely. Vote, Run, Lead is training the women who should have been in government a long time ago, but training us whenever we are ready to step forward and to run for our city councils and some places our state Supreme Courts, they're elected, our sheriffs, our, you know, city clerks. But we're really focused right now. We just launched a project last year that really focuses on the state legislatures and making sure more women like us are running for those seats, women who are anti-racist in their leadership, reform-minded and wanting to make our democracy better. And of course, you know, feminists and how they want to operate. And so all those policies that you just ticked off that allow for women to fully thrive in this country. And of course, not just, you know, make our lives easier, but make the lives of men and boys a lot better, too.
Absolutely. What does it take to run for office? I know a lot of people look at elected leaders and think, oh my gosh, I can never do that. But the truth of the matter is, many people could do that. You know, what does it take?
Yes, for sure. So, you know, on the, some of the hard skill side, you do, you have to learn how to fundraise. You have to learn how to speak publicly. You know, you have to be able to go knock on your neighbor's door and ask them for their vote and ask your network for 25 and 50 and, you know, donations. So it takes some sweat equity to get out there. It takes you articulating your vision. What do you want to do differently? You know, if you had a chance to wave a magic wand and you could fix your community, you could make it better, you could keep it, you know, if you like the way it is right now, make sure that that isn't being chipped away, you know, being able to articulate that and really at your core, what can only you do? So it's a lot of self-inquiry about, you know, who do I want to be as I lead? And then, you know, we'll teach you the skills of what it takes to, you know, create a voter contact list and get out there and figure out how many voters you got to contact and how long you have to do it. And, you know, but if it's planning, it's good old fashioned planning. It's getting out on the streets of your neighborhood. And as you run for higher office, like Congress or governorships, or even some of these state legislative races, you know, you may have to cut a commercial, right? But I wouldn't worry too much about some of that stuff. And for most of the 519,000 offices out there, you are knocking on your neighbor's door, asking them to support you as you go and make your community better and support you as a volunteer, support you with their dollars and support you with their vote when election comes up.
You have to make the decision to dive in, to step off the sidelines,
yeah,
and be
that's
there.
Right.
And then I think one of the next steps is to start your own kitchen cabinet. Find 5 to 10 people who you adore, support, and respect, who also do the same of you, to advise you on your campaign. Hopefully a couple of them have helped advise other campaigns or have run for office, but that's not necessary. What would you say the first step is after you decide, hey, I'm going to dive in, I'm going to step off the sidelines, and you're starting to think about, maybe I need to make a kitchen cabinet. What should you be thinking about in that moment?
Your kitchen cabinet is people who are going to tell you the truth. So there's a level of trust, but your kitchen cabinet is, you know, maybe it's not your sister or your best friend, right? These are people in the community who you have some who you have a strong professional relationship with, people whose judgment you really trust, people who have a couple of different areas of expertise, so that your kitchen cabinet isn't all the same people with the same skill set, right? So maybe there's someone in your kitchen cabinet that understands finance a little better than you do, and they could serve as your treasurer. You know, maybe there's someone who has done the political stuff before who you want to really ask some of those dumb questions that, you know, aren't dumb. We all have them, but you feel like they're, you know, those are the kind of political questions you don't know and you want to trust. You want to be able to go to them for their advice. Do you have a girlfriend who is absolutely a whiz at marketing and, you know, can help you think through the, you know, just how you want to talk about yourself in a way that feels good to you? So different sales sets of a, of your kitchen cabinet. 5 to 10 women is a good number, but people who will pick up the phone when you call and people who, you have real trust with, and that, you know, can be there for you in at, you know, that 11 o'clock hour.
And this brings up something that's really important. Finding mentors is also important, as is mentoring other people. Both, you know, finding people who've done this before, who've succeeded before, who you can trust to give you advice. And then, of course, doing the same for others. And can you speak about the role of mentors and, importantly, women helping women in this whole process?
Absolutely. I mean, it's why we actually started a coaching program where you can hop on the phone and talk to someone who's done it before for about 20 to 30 minutes and just get some of those initial questions out there that can often maybe, you know, just a few things holding you back. So we have a resource around coaching. Take advantage of that through the Run 51 program over at voterunlead.org. But pick up the phone or write that email or say, can I do, if you know, if you're in sort of, you know, COVID safe mode, can we do a 10-minute Zoom? You know, can I bring you a coffee? Can we go for a walk where I can, you know, ask you a few questions? And these folks are busy, especially current elected officials who want to help. So don't worry about writing that email or reaching out a few times. You know, a girlfriend of mine calls it the Dory rule, you know, Dory from Finding Nemo, where she just sort of says the same thing over and over because she forgets. Send that email over and over. If there really is someone who you want to have that mentor conversation with, you want to start that relationship, because often it's just going to the bottom of their inbox, and make it easy for them. And then come prepared with a couple of those questions. And, you know, I'm not a fan of the, hey, who are three people that I can then go ask? I'm not a fan of that question, right? I'm a fan of figuring out what, how this one person can have a more, have some longevity with you over the course of the campaign. You know, can I count on you to, you know, answer some questions about, you know, whatever that person's area of expertise is. So being really strategic with that mentor, making it easy for that mentor to, for you to access them and making good use of their time will help create a strong relationship where they really feel like they're, you know, they're really helping you.
Yeah. And what's important is you don't need to say, okay, I'm going to run for office tomorrow, so right, I'm going to get a mentor today. That's, you know, right, you can be thinking, I'm going to run for office in 10 years, 8 years, 6 years, 4 years, you know, 3, 2, 1 years, and really start having those mentor relationships and start having those conversations, yep, well ahead of time. I think that's one thing that, you know, people don't realize is that if you're interested, you can have a long lead of being interested before you run for office. Because honestly, it takes a while to figure out, you know, how do you build up that support? How do you frame your policy areas? You know, how do you have that deep thought? And it, and
well, and
some, yeah, people can do it quickly. I won't say that some people can do it quickly.
Sure. There might be a special election or somebody. Yeah. Lots of retirements are going to be coming up in 2022. Lots of retirements in 2024, especially I think in our state houses. So right now is a great time for you to be starting to think about, one, what do people in my community care about and what do I care about? Do they match up? You know, how many issues is that? What are my top three? What are my community's top three? And you know, that is the start of your policy platform, right? How do you find that out? We have a great program called the 90-Day Challenge. Now, that's for someone who needs to ramp up quickly, but it's an accordion. It can get stretched out over 6 months, 9 months, a year. It's 30 actions in 90 days to really kickstart that journey of saying yes to yourself. And how quickly can you can ramp up, you know, of course, depends on you, but figuring out what office might be the right office for you. You know, the executive offices of mayors and county, you know, county heads or the legislative, working on teams at a city council level, you know, how do you work best? And then what, you know, what are the requirements of some of those jobs and how do they line up with your family life, your work life, especially for, we know this, it over indexes for women that, and you know this, we've got a lot to juggle. So we've got to be looking at how does leading a political life, how does being a public figure going to fit in my calendar? What do I give up for this? You know, what changes? How does this work with my partner or my support network? And so those are really the three big areas I think folks need to just spend some time with themselves. But again, you're right. You can do it over a longer time. You don't have to. Just because you've shared some ambition doesn't mean that you have to run tomorrow, right? You have a lot of ways to lead up to getting to where you need to be.
Yeah, and you can help other people run. This is the other exciting thing. You don't have to run for office yourself in order to change who's in public office. You can also find people who mirror your own goals, your own priorities, your own dream for what our country or our neighborhoods or our cities or our states can be, and help them run for office. So what types of resources are there on the Vote Run Lead website, and how can people get there?
So head over to voterunlead.org, but also head over to our YouTube channel. So just put in Vote Run Lead into YouTube and it will pop up. And there you can find an amazing array of inspiration, of course, which is always good if you're, you know, things are feeling a little tough, but a dose of understanding our democracy, a dose of how to actually pick the office to run for. Some campaign manager resources are over there. How to be a great volunteer is a video series you will find. And all of these are helpful ways for you to get involved in other people's campaigns. Having greater, you know, just greater civic literacy when it comes to campaigns and elections, understanding the vocabulary of campaigns and elections, of course, volunteering on a campaign. But if you really want to help another woman get elected, be her campaign manager. Go get trained in a campaign manager school. We're starting one. There's lots of resources online. There's a couple around the country that are great, but we need more women and more women of color campaign managers. A ton of first-time candidates come to me and say, I don't have any campaign managers that look like me, you know my story, that are also moms and know how to juggle time, you know? So the more of us that can be there as campaign managers and treasurers volunteer coordinators, those are taking on a real formal role in a campaign is a really strong way to support a woman who, who's running right now.
Absolutely. I'm so excited that you shared your website because it is spectacular. I want everybody who's thinking about running or who's thinking about helping someone who's running, if you are thinking about running or you're thinking about helping someone who's running, please go to the Vote Run Lead website right now. Get involved and support. And one way you can support women running for office is also to support Vote Run Lead as an organization. Phenomenal trainings, phenomenal candidate support. So please, please, please support Vote Run Lead for the support that they do. Do you have hope for the upcoming elections?
I do. We are back to traveling around the country safely, of course, a little bit of a pause right now, but the energy is there. The energy is really palpable. And I'm most excited about Run 51, which is our mission to get to 51% women's representation in our state houses across America. I'm really pushing women to run for the state house. Of course, run what you're most comfortable with, but right now the most critical office, and between now and 2030 that we need a flood of Moms Rising women, of VRL women running for, is the state house. If we really want to see not just the federal level policy, but where that money gets spent and how it gets allocated to the communities who need it most.
So if you're listening right now, go to Vote Run Lead and get involved. Think about running for office. Think about helping someone run for office. Let's make change happen. Thank you so much for being on, Erin Velarde, Vote Run Lead. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for lifting our whole democracy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in as we tackle the top topics facing our nation in a way that requires the most boring disclaimer in the history of the planet Earth. Here goes. Views expressed on this show are those of the individual speakers and should not be attributed to Moms Rising, to this station, or to any news or social media service that may disseminate a recording of this show to the public or to any segment of the public. Boom! We'll catch you next week. We're gonna fight for love.